On August 21, 1945, the plutonium core produced a burst of neutron radiation that led to physicist Harry Dahlin's death. Dahlin made a mistake while performing neutron reflector experiments on the core. The core was placed within a stack of neutron-reflective tungsten carbide bricks, and the addition of each brick moved the assembly closer to criticality. While attempting to stack another brick around the assembly, Dahlin accidentally dropped it onto the core and thereby caused the core to go well into supercriticality, a self-sustaining critical chain reaction. He quickly moved the brick off the assembly, but received a fatal dose of radiation. He died 25 days later from acute radiation poisoning. We've all seen the face-melting scenes from the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Nazis hungry for superweapons being obliterated completely. The Covenant scene and its divine retribution are born from lore and conspiracy around the Templars, and theories about its origin as a form of secret ancient technology as the instrument of God's vengeance. In this week's podcast, Magnetic Stripper, Greg Coles, and Clay Tantor, three lifelong Gen X weirdos, explore ancient technology, the Ark of the Covenant, and the Templars' Demon Core. Join us.
We are here to talk about many, 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 many things. You can assume that everything that we say is an abstracted layer somewhere above, I don't know, conspiracy,
some historical.
Historical.
That space between
Shadow. We could argue is another layer of conspiracy,
conjecture,
misinformation, conjecture, right? So this is in the tradition of a combination of a Frank Chu sign, a Philip K. Dick story, and a episode of The Simpsons where we have two kind of discussions that are intertwined, that being the Demon Core, a notorious cursed ball of plutonium.
Okay, let me read from the basic story on the Demon Core. So the core was assembled. There's a safety margin against extraneous factors that might increase reactivity, causing the core to become supercritical. And then prompt critical, a brief state of rapid energy release. These factors are not common in the environment. They are circumstances like the compression of solid metallic core, which would eventually be the method to explode the bomb. On August 21st, 1945, the plutonium core produced a burst of neutron radiation that led to physicist Harry Dahlin's death. Dahlin made the mistake of performing neutron reflector experiments on the core. He was working alone. A security guard, Private Robert J. Hermerly, was seated at a desk 10 to 12 feet away from him. The core was placed within a stack of neutron-reflective tungsten carbide bricks, and the addition of each brick moved the assembly closer to criticality. While attempting to stack another brick around the assembly, Dahlin accidentally dropped it under the core and thereby caused the core to go well into supercriticality, a self-sustaining critical chain reaction. He quickly moved the brick off the assembly but received a fatal dose of radiation. He died 25 days later from acute radiation poisoning.
So what we're saying is that this is the equivalency of Jackass, but for nuclear physics.
What are they playing with? They're like listening to that Geiger counter going, woo, woo, is it going to blow up? Is it going to blow up?
Man, that thing is shooting massive amounts of gamma
rays. Yeah, it's not like
rays.
They don't know, right? You know,
yeah,
they're basically thinking, right?
You know, we're going to turn into giants or the Incredible Hulk, right?
Well,
but this is before that mythology.
Well, I mean, what is it? We're always going to play with the boundaries between what we believe is safe and what we want to test, right?
Yeah, but didn't somebody jam a screwdriver in there? I mean, this is like...
Well, that wasn't what caused that criticality. That was... They would purposefully see how close they could get. They were edging, you know, like...
Yes,
people
absolutely!
They were edging,
everyone
right?
In that room! is playing some suicidal game with this dude.
Yeah.
You know, they're watching, and, you know, they're all physicists. They all know what's going on. They're listening to the Geiger counter.
At a key time in our history where people believe the existential existence of America was on the line, too, right?
So. Okay, so what about the Ark of the Covenant and it being, like, a crazy mythological weapon? I mean, it was supposed to be marched in front of the armies of Israel in order to destroy all the opponents.
Well, if we say that people do that, this thing that they did with the Demon Core, human beings test the boundaries, and we just make that assumption, then was the Ark of the Covenant a device like the Demon Core? So, Greg, can you give us a little bit of background on at least your thoughts on the Templar and the history of the Templar that might make this relevant?
Okay, so according to Holy Blood, Holy Grail, the Templars were the descendants of the Grand Real. You know, usually we think Holy Grail, we're like, oh, a cup. But it also translates to Holy Blood in French.
Santa Sangre.
Right. So that's the concept that, you know, it's like 1,000 years after the birth of Christ. These are the offspring of Mary who has migrated from the Middle East to France. And that these are basically like the second sons of various houses of nobility. It's like they're educated and, you know, they're related, but they're not actually getting the land. So they're swinging dicks, you know, in a time of lots, you know, not too much opportunity in their homeland. So if they want to make it big in the world and make their name mean something, they've got to kind of go out and make it happen. So a handful of these dudes are saying, oh, well, we're going to do this thing that the Hospitallers are already doing it. They've got, you know, an actual army. It's not just a handful of dudes.
But they're trying to get pilgrims safely on their journey is the kind of core mission,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but there's some complicated business with that, because with the Templar, they had kind of a money-in, money-out thing going, where you would give them your money when you left, and then when you got there, they would give it back to you.
Sounds like a bank.
They were
invented
the first bank.
The concept of a check, yes.
Yeah. So this is what got them into the biggest trouble later on.
Well, there was like the stated line of purpose, and then there's the secret line of purpose.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
the stated digging line of purpose is, yeah, helping pilgrims. But the real purpose is to reestablish that royal lineage that Jesus was. Now, like our Roman mythology of Jesus, that like, oh, he was just some peasant living in a farm. But according to them, he was basically like a person of
as a
royal
king
lineage.
As a king.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, not just in an abstract way, but from a genetic lineage.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why you get into all these pissing matches between the English and the French, because, you know, Mary supposedly popped out the kid, the offspring of Jesus, in France, which is, you know, they're like, our lineage is the holy lineage, whereby the English would say exactly the same, which is why you have, you know, a song by Blake that says that England is the new Jerusalem. What is this claim?
Emerson, Lake, and Palmer do a really fun version.
Oh, man, I love that.
Yeah. So, two missions. So then what is the connection then of the Ark to the Templar, if that's the case? I don't. How did that become part of their mission?
Okay, so Moses is up on the mountain, seeing some kind of glowing shit. He's up there for quite a while. Who knows what he's eating up there? And he finds something. It gives him a sunburn, right?
Gotcha.
You know?
Here we go.
Yeah, you know, supposedly had something written on it, but it's a bunch of broken pieces. You know? So it's like, okay, you had these 15 commandments. Whoops, we got these 10 commandments. You seen History of the World? Mel Brooks?
Of course.
Yeah.
You've seen 2001 A Space Odyssey also, right?
Yeah.
Are we sure that the actual commandments themselves were written on whatever, quote-unquote, the tablets? I mean...
Oh, well, you see, that's the other thing. A lot of interesting people have said a lot of interesting things about this, including that he said that it was a tablet, but in fact it was chunks of a radioactive meteorite.
Here we go. This is the road I'm trying to travel with you two. Is it plausible that whatever was found was technology, regardless of whether it was of this planet or not of this planet, that it was technology that was found in the same way that in 2001 A Space Odyssey the monolith falls and it brings understanding and knowledge? Could this actually be a form of monolith or technology?
Well, the difference I would see, the monolith in 2001 is obviously some technology that the space baby has sent down to these trogs, whereas the Ark is not necessarily any conscious hand, in my opinion. You know, it's a glowing rock that burns stuff.
It could just be a big uranium pile that was found.
And precisely.
Yeah.
Okay, so then there's the Rod of Aaron. Okay. Oh, let's talk about one thing before we go here, because we've left out, and I'm sure Greg can tell us more about this, the archaeology under all of the holy sites that was done by the Templar during their stay, because this is where they supposedly get the goods.
Right. There have been later archaeological digs there where they found Templar artifacts.
Do we have a picture of that on the Trello?
Do have a couple of things.
Let's pop that up.
With Moses, a couple gifs of Moses.
Okay, let's pop that up.
Like him showing the what do you call it, tablets. From such a difference, no one's going to be able to read it. And they're partying and drunk anyway. So they're like, what? Some reading? What? I'm drunk.
Hey man, I'm hanging off with this golden calf. Dude.
Okay, I see.
Really? Don't harsh me.
I see some. Can you tell me what the image is?
I think it's Moses tossing the tablets under the party goers.
Okay, I got that. Oh yeah, there's a big party. I don't know if you guys are able to see the stream.
No, I get it.
Okay, then I'll share it with you guys.
Yeah, you need to do a screen share.
I'm sharing it on the actual stream itself.
So now, one of the things we were talking about, this person Udom, who was killed by like they're driving pushing the ark by ox cart, and it slips, and the thing starts to fall off the cart, and the guy's like, "Whoa, I got it, guys!" And instant death, not like over a couple of days, just crack.
Life baked.
Is gone. Yes. And his brother's like, what the fuck? And it was like a parade. Everyone's like, happy. We wiped out our enemies. We're bringing it home. And, you know, here the most pious dude is using his old ox cart and zap. And they're
okay,
like,
so,
oh.
Wait a second, Greg.
So look in the chat and then click the link that I put in there and put it in one of your windows so you can see what I'm streaming.
Okay. Is that doing it? No, I've got the wrong one. Yeah, this is the one I was looking for. Actually, I got both the Mel Brooks one too.
Oh, do you want to see?
Are you guys seeing that?
We can put that.
Oh,
up,
is he make cover? Is that what I need?
No, I'm just showing you what I'm streaming to the stream.
Oh, okay. I'm not getting it right.
So, Greg, yes. What do you know about the Rod of Aaron?
Well, once again, that's, more of Moses' tricks. Who was educated in Egypt? And one before we jump onto that, one thing I wanted to talk about that you mentioned before is the Ten Commandments did not just appear then. They are almost point for point things from the Book of the Dead. And after all, where did Moses get his education, right? He was very educated person.
Oh, yeah. He's totally a product of the Egyptian educational system.
Absolutely. What was the word? Perfect in word and deed. That's how he was described as an Egyptian. So that means he knew the Egyptian rituals as well as anyone knew them.
Well, I mean, this is a whole other topic that I'm sure we'll be covering later. But the discussion of how Hermes Trismegistus throughout history has been the advocate for everyone. Like, Hermes Trismegistus knew Abraham. He knew Noah. He knew Moses.
I mean, you're talking about the Hermetic tradition, completely the Hermetic tradition, then, right?
So
there's a connection between Moses and the Hermetic tradition. I wasn't aware of that.
There is a chemical compound that is called Aaron's rod. That's some kind of like sugar and phosphorus. That when you burn, like they sold it in the back of comic books, like make snakes out of fire.
Oh, that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and it would burn and make some black fucking Cheetos thing. And that's what I've heard. It was Aaron's rod.
Okay, so in the discussion of the Ark of the Covenant,
so it's a chemical it's a chemical technology.
Yeah. So in the Ark of the Covenant, it's one of the items that's listed as a contain. Like if you were to buy an Ark of the Covenant, it would come with the two cherubs and the rods and
the table, incense burner. Yeah, it comes with all the furniture.
But
right.
it came with this thing called the staff of Aaron or the rod of Aaron. And a lot of discussion around this. Some people say if this was a nuclear type weapon, that it was a carbon rod that you would shove in there to keep the thing from being critical. Whereas the people who claim that this is the other discussion, that it was an electrical weapon, that it's a giant capacitor, and that the...
piezoelectric or...
Or something. Right. Some people say the mana that was inside of it was some type of reactive material that turned it into a giant wet cell or dry cell battery, and that you would take this rod and put it into the ground, and it kept the thing grounded until you wanted to use it, and then you would pull the grounding rod out, and it would turn all your people into basically an electrical conduit, and anybody who touched you got zapped.
Okay, let me read this. So, Aaron's rod refers to any walking sticks carried by Moses' brother, Aaron, in the Torah. The Bible tells how, along with Moses' rod, Aaron's rod was endowed with miraculous power during the plagues of Egypt that preceded the Exodus. Let's see what the power. Aaron's rod is cited twice in exhibiting miraculous power of its own when not physically in the grasp of its owner. In Exodus 7, God sends Moses and Aaron to the Pharaoh, once more instructing Aaron that when the Pharaoh demands to see a miracle, he is to cast down his rod and it will become a serpent.
And that this, I interpret, is that chemical.
They call that stuff snake. They call them snakes.
Liquid snake.
Yeah. They call them snakes. Yeah.
From what I read, that's what they are attributing this to.
Gotcha.
But I guess the trick was Ramses, wizards were able to do it, so they were familiar with that technology. But somehow Moses, mine can eat yours. Mine has a hat or something, right?
Gotcha.
But somehow they duplicated it, but Moses was somehow better.
So I've heard one more theory about the technology of both that the Jews had when they were wandering the desert, as well as the Ark of the Covenant. And that is that it was you would have to guess, some sort of technology that allowed for the creation of equivalent of like a Soylent of its time.
Oh, you're talking about the mana.
The mana machine. That's right.
That was stored with it. And there's like, you know, when they're going through the accoutrements, part of it is like some little cup or container for whatever mana is.
And so that was how they were able to wander the desert without food for so long, in that on one day a week, the device had to regenerate, and so they couldn't eat on that day.
So it'd kick out some nasty goodness with extra energy.
That together.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. But it was
Or chia pets, maybe.
Chia.
The whole thing was filled with chia seeds?
Yeah. Chia Moses. Looked like Chia Jerry, Jerry Garcia, right?
This sure.
Gross. Whoa. 40 days.
Wow. Yeah, that's something else that I love is the translation that said that Moses had horns. And so...
the translate. Well, no, that... Zachariah Sitchin wrote all the books about, like, Sumeria. So, no, one of the things he really talks about, he's a trained linguist. So, speaks Latin, speaks Hebrew, can read cuneiform. And he said so much of these weird shit in the Bible are inaccurate translations. You know, because, you know, obviously it wasn't written in English, wasn't even written in Latin. You know, most of the stuff the first time it was put to pen was in Greek. And so, you know, as things go through three language changes, horn was originally something like beams of light, referring to a luminous quality that Moses had coming off the mountain, not actual calcium deposits coming out of his forehead.
Come on, man. You're taking away my horn. Have you ever
like
seen
Loki.
Pictures? Like, I think it's Gustav Dore that kind of does it halfway. And what he does is he with this kind of like Jack Kirby-like hairdo where he has these, you know, like he has these
head
little hair wings that stick up like this. And he says, everybody just thought they were horns because he had a crazy hairdo because the electricity made his hair stand on end.
Yeah.
You know?
But in my understanding, that is the fault of translating through multiple languages when they don't really have the technical terms to describe a machine or a radioactive phenomenon, right? What do they got? They got flowers, dirt, and dreams, right? You know?
Sand.
Yeah. They're like,
and
it was like sand.
Sometimes.
Yeah, it was up in the air and it glowed.
So let me ask. This is kind of great background on what we think potentially it was, some sort of a either technology or device or of some sort that was venerated. Clearly it was, you know, held in high regard and protected. Techniques were needed in order to operate it. Safety, there were safety protocols, right? Like incense, you have some of the understanding of that. Why don't you talk a little bit about the safety protocols?
So, okay, we talk about the guy who got zapped dead by his brother. Also, the guy pulling the cart was just like, yeah, let's just leave it here and let's go pray somewhere else and just leave this dangerous thing. You know, let's not bring it to our big church where, you know. He didn't, at that point, he's like, this is not a holy representation of our deity. It's just a dangerous object. And so in the Bible, the thing is only able to be approached in a tabernacle, big tent, filled with incense. So what are the properties of this incense? Do they themselves have particle dampening abilities? Are they hallucinogenic? Right? Some combination, you know, maybe it like makes the radiation down to like a dull roar, so it's just sort of creating some cerebral feedback.
Kind of like a lead shield or something. Some protons get through, some gamma rays get through some protons, but precisely. Not enough to be completely...
He's got a sunburn.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. They're the glow, the light is coming off of me after being exposed to it. I get a suntan. but that was... what's his name? Graham Hancock's research saying, you know, that it could only be approached in this misty environment that, you know, at the very least has two of those characteristics.
Gotcha. Okay, so how did the Templars get mixed up in all this?
Well, you know, at some point they must have had some inside knowledge as to what the capacities for this thing was, but they knew where it was.
So they were already a standing army. They had resources. Well,
a dozen guys. Not a huge amount of people. Not a huge amount of people. Less than two dozen guys.
Really? When they got involved, they were only a small group?
Yeah. And these are not battle-hardened dudes. These are the second sons of rich families. So they're fops. You know, they've got clean clothes. They can read, right?
Yeah. I think that kind of changes when they start dragging stuff out from underneath the what is now the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
Well, that's the thing. Their intellects. I mean, what the hell? There's no concept of archaeology at the time. You know, the only reason you dig in the ground is to build a toilet or maybe mining.
Well, I mean, they brought back something that had enough clout to it that they built one of the biggest cathedrals around it, and basically wrote on the side of it, "In this building lies the Ark of the Covenant."
Now, is this in Ethiopia? Because isn't the story that the knights took?
No, this is in France.
Okay, so this is before it went to Ethiopia.
Okay, so here's where it gets a little wacky and a little hinky, because the current current Templar claim that there were 10 of these, and that he has seen 6 of them, and at least one in America, according to his eyewitness account.
Oh, is this the? Not Jehovah's Witness, the Mormons? Maybe.
This is way out to Utah
and buried it.
Well, I mean, it's a similar, you know, in a way, it's a similar thing to basically be taking any artifact on a leap of faith, especially one that you can't hold in your hands and, you know, put a Geiger counter over the top of it, or, you know, shoot ultraviolet radiation and see what kind of energy patterns come off of it, or at least if it's got something written on it, have that translated. You know, this is the most vaporware object in our tradition, and by our tradition I mean in the Western tradition.
A physical phenomenon that I think is relevant to this is the one of people leaving their body and experiencing going towards the light. For years, people put spiritual significance to that. They're like, you know, what was it, Poltergeist? Go, don't go towards the light. You know, and say like, oh, it's whatever God's goodness that you're going towards. And then I heard some interviews with test pilots who regularly went in these G-force machines. And they're just like, as the blood starts to be forced down into your torso and away from your brain, that's how your subjective experience is this tunnel-like
tunnel vision
with a light at the end. He said, like, yeah, when I hear these things, I'm like, dude, that's a day at work for me. You know?
Right.
So now what if this low-level exposure to whatever this chunk of plutonium is causing this shared mental phenomenon that these guys are all hunkered down in this tent?
Whatever this technology is, right? Whatever the technology is.
Because they have done a lot of test with electromagnetic radiation and shooting it into different parts of human brains. And in one case, I don't know exactly the configuration or the wavelengths or anything that they're using here, but that they could create a, not to order, but a general religious experience. As in, they would do this to people, and they would say, oh my God, I saw heaven, or I saw
it too.
God, or I saw, you know, Jesus, or whoever.
But it's
whoever
shared.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And so basically there is something to be said for an electromagnetic device that would cause hallucinations due to scrambling up your gray matter to a certain degree.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
I want to figure out what happened to this technology. So if we kind of do a little bit of a trace back to, like...
Oh, we left out Ethiopia here, Bob.
Well, but we left out a whole bunch of stuff, which is, if we say there's a timeline, and we don't know exactly the dates, but we know the path, the geographic path. I mean, it started somewhere where Moses was, which is close to Egypt. And then it traveled probably around the Middle East some, and then it went to Europe, right? We know it went to Europe after that, France, England, and then it ended up in Ethiopia, right? Is that kind of the general?
No. These are two different storylines.
Oh.
One storyline includes that when everything fell apart, in the Romans came in and they pushed everything out.
Clay, you cut out.
I'm here.
There you go.
There you are. That it ended up in Ethiopia because that's where they put it to get it away from the invading armies. Because that was the thing is that it's not just this weapon or containing. It basically is the object, the Faki symbolized the power of Rome. This symbolized right. The power of Israel, right? And so wherever it was actually Israel.
Precisely.
Right?
Gotcha.
And so whoever has this has, like, the favor of God, has the... it's basically like the signature of the covenant.
Gotcha.
Right? That's why they call it the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
Gotcha.
Because that covenant's like a big... crazy heavy duty deal. I mean, who doesn't want to have the favor?
Sure, that makes a lot of sense.
And during the early formation of the Roman Catholic Church, they knew of this family of the descendants of Christ who were not necessarily part of the Roman Catholic Church.
Oh, that gets into craziness, though.
Yes.
Are we talking about the group that's
Dagobert,
in France?
The Merovingians,
or are we talking about the lineage of James, who was Jesus's brother, who had
a completely separate
church that Paul kind of just basically came in and said, "I'm taking this thing to the Romans because it's a dead end if we keep it amongst the Hebraic faith."
Well, that really is kind of the intellectual dissonance that most Christians have. They're like, this is a Roman religion you're studying, right? You know, where's Rome? Where's all the Catholic stuff? It's in Italy. It's not in Jerusalem, right? You know?
Oh yeah, the church of Peter and Paul and like the Roman Catholic Church is a completely different animal from a messianic Hebraic tradition.
Yeah.
You know? So we have things like the change in the diet, the change away from the traditionalism, because they wanted the thing to be able to hook in to the Roman culture, which was very... You know, even though it's the embodiment of fascistic, it basically has a cosmopolitan extensibility because they were trying to grab as much land slash tribute. It wasn't the land even. It was the ability to pull in tribute so a small right. group of people could live decadently. I mean, does that sound...
So, let me ask you something. Does this relate to the two different stories of the Covenant then, where they the lines of the story are aligned with the powers that want to say that they had it?
Well, okay, so in that case, I'm surprised that more people didn't claim to have it. Because if you're talking about something that somebody hasn't seen in a good 500, 600, 1,000, 2,000, I mean, how many years?
Yo,
you can, for the true cross.
It's like,
right?
I've got nuclear weapons. I've got nuclear weapons.
It's more like, say you didn't even know exactly what it did, but it's claim. And so what you do with the claim is you basically say, we are the true because we have the thing.
Right.
That's what all these artifacts are really about. This is, I mean, you think this isn't going on right now? Look at Hobby Lobby.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, this is still, this thing that we're talking about right now is not like a dead end. It's like people are still trying to lay claim to the thing that gives them the
divine
the mark of approval.
Yeah, the divine.
Like right here, we are
guidance.
The one.
Yeah.
Well, that's why, like, so much. Well, I think Columbus is a perfect example. How, you know, he's driven by this mythology to do things that even at the time were considered horrific. You know? Columbus was convinced that he was creating a new Jerusalem.
Yeah, because he was secretly Jewish. They've just
yes.
started talking about it. And so Columbus basically says, I'm going to create a new Jerusalem because the Inquisition was gnarly and basically affected the Jewish population of Spain in ways that, you know, people don't really, you know, they always think, oh, they drove Islam from Spain and they got rid of all the heresies.
They canceled everyone's debt by killing the bankers.
yeah, exactly. I mean, man, that was a multifaceted tool of the powers to be. And I don't want to throw the church in there as the only power to be. I mean, this is wrapped up in the crowns just as much.
Well, because it ends up being debt. And getting back to the Templar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so their ultimate demise in the 1200s was linked to Philip le Bel had been attacked by a mob and was forced to take refuge in the Templars Cathedral, and he was so amazed at the riches and splendor he had, and he was heavily indebted to them, that it's surmised that it was easier for him to sort of push this weird conspiracy about them to take their shit and absolve his debt to them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, basically, this is why I said that the Templars' undoing was because of their banking. Right?
Yeah, but I mean, isn't it a fundamentally kind of challenging notion on sovereignty, both of the Catholic Church as well as the sovereignty of kings in Europe, to say, okay, we're an army, we believe that there are actually true kings that are descendants of Jesus, and all y'all, popes and all y'all kings of Europe, you aren't the true kings. These people
okay,
we're
okay,
backing.
Let's wind that back. Do you think that there hasn't been a lineage of kings that didn't come from divinity in history?
Yeah, they were all claiming
history,
that to some degree.
Well, but the question is whether they had, like, the Templars were attempting to really prove the bloodline, is my understanding, right? Which is the
yes.
holy blood concept.
Not just that, but a consolidation of, okay, so if you have all the holy artifacts in one place, and you basically control, and you can basically say at any time, you know, that thing that you're saying just ain't so, because we have the real artifact here, and we have the cup with the blood of Christ in it, and we have all of the stuff, right? You don't think that that basically means that you can do things like move the papacy to France, which, by the way, happened.
Right,
yep.
Right.
Right? Yep, yep. So this is a consolidation of power where you are basically saying, hey, I got this great idea. What if we were able to say the papacy, the royal family, and the lineage that we're deriving our system from, which is this, you know, Hebraic, Egyptian, Christian backbone, is all in one place. That means that we rule.
Yes. One thing I'd like to point on that has been hypothesized is they're trying to create a unified faith that combined Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. You know, like, Jacques de Molay was tortured, and, you know, I mean, obviously...
Baphomet,
right, exactly. Yeah. You know, was supposedly a three-faced head. Some people hypothesize that as a deity that embraced all three of the Abrahamic religions.
This is the crazy thing is that there's other people that seem to be saying that one thing that happened was that they rediscovered all the Gnostic texts, and Christian Gnosticism is a completely different animal. I mean, in that one, you know, later on we might talk about things like whether or not this is a simulated universe. Well, the Gnostics were 100% in that this was a fake universe created by a demiurge to basically get people to renounce the true wisdom of the universe.
Well, that's the Philip K. Dick Vallis.
He's a Gnostic, right? To the core.
The idea that we're actually living in the days of the end day after Christ's death, and the devil has tricked us into thinking.
Creating an illusion of time to keep us ensnared.
That's a great idea and a great segue. We only have about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, maybe we should start wrapping things up.
Yeah.
What are some conclusions we can draw from, you know, from the line of talk we took?
Well, I think here's my conjecture. I think it was some form of technology, whether it was piezoelectric or it was thermonuclear in nature. Probably not thermonuclear, just radioactive. That's what I should say, not thermonuclear. I think it was some form of technology. And that that it lived a life of both political intrigue as well as mystery, and that it is very likely the Templars were involved in it. About that conjecture?
Instead of saying that it's any particular thing, what I'm more fascinated with is the concept in both the demon core and in the Ark of the Covenant that human beings are obsessed with power, and sometimes this power is not an abstraction of power, but is an actual literal, an attempt at a literal depiction of power.
That's great.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter really what it is. If a human being thinks that it can figure out how to broadcast its will through some type of technology, like, why are these people prying around in this ball of plutonium?
Why are people stacking bricks and taking something to the... Why are they edging a nuclear reaction?
It's tickling something in their brain.
Right.
You know, and it's like this lurid Thanatos fascination.
Yes.
That, like, they're just hanging over the edge of the cliff, checking it out until they're tumbling, you know?
Have you guys ever met nerds before? You guys know any nerds? Do you know this thing that nerds do where they're like, you know, if I only had this one more part, if I only had this one more part, the world would change.
Exactly.
I will. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So, collectors do this. Collectors do this, right?
Collectors do this, but people who are working on their, you know, wily inventors and such will often, I mean, we could talk about the Boy Scout nuclear reactor at some point.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
You know, that guy who basically did mail order and went into these places and got them to give him various forms of radioactive material so he could set up an atomic pile in his, I guess, garage.
Right. So that tells me that it's possible. That tells me all in its own that it's possible.
With the EPA.
Right.
Greg, this was serious shit. It ended up with the EPA. You know, basically, the guy created a mass that he could control to go critical.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh,
why
shit.
Would you do this? And you know what I'm saying? Like,
you answered your own question.
Small,
you answered your own question because this is human nature. And the Ark of the Covenant and the will is human
nature. A little bit, and then the next time it needs to be a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
You know?
So let's take that to the theme of the richest family, which is...
I had so much fun, guys.
Next time it's got to be a little bit more. Every time it just gets a little, maybe a little weirder in the spirit of... 12 galaxies and everything that represents. Let's keep it weird. Had a great time hanging out with both of you guys, and let's try to do it again. Let's do it again next week. What do you say?
Sounds great. Absolutely. Yeah. In the meantime, we'll talk about some, you know, whatever things we got percolating.
We've got some ideas. I mean, we've got a bunch of weird ideas. Ideas like, you know, simulation theory and the metaverse. Ray Harryhausen and the new descending staircase. That's a topic I love. I think Jim would have a lot to say about Ray Harryhausen.
And Marcel Duchamp.
Yeah,
Even the subjects we went over today, just Jacques de Molay, we could say his connection with the Shroud of Turin.
Yep.
And the composition of the Shroud of Turin. Constantine and the formation of the Roman Church. Man, there's so many things we could riff on.
Yeah, some of the topics that we're talking about are modern seances and the ghosts of ChatGPT
and Houdini.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah,
he was the fucking Ghostbuster, dude.
Did you know that there was a collaboration between H.P. Lovecraft and Houdini?
Great. Oh, let's make that a topic.
About him being kidnapped and taken into the
pyramid. It's fan fiction. I read it. It's a cool, it's called Lovecraft's Book. It's even got Robert E. Howard in it.
Yeah.
Like pulling some motherfuckers over their dick. What did I tell you?
This is just a taste of things to come. We got lots of topics
I'm into it. I had so much fun, guys.
Okay, great to see both of you. You know I love you both dearly, and I'm so glad you're both lifelong friends.
Oh, I'm psyched. I can't wait to do this again.
See you next week.
Take care, gents.
Bye.
All right, guys. Having a good one.
We hope you enjoyed this first episode of the Richest Family Podcast. We're hoping to try to do this weekly with lots of really interesting and weird topics. You can also find us on YouTube. That's youtube.com/@ClayTantor. We also stream on Twitch Sundays at 10 a.m. on twitch.tv/ClayTantor. Hope you can hang out with us. We'd love to see you on the chats, and we'll talk to you later. See you soon.